This is Tuesday, the 5th of September, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Coming up, the Trump administration wants DACA to go away, but wants the U.S. Congress to do it.
I'm here today to announce that the program known as DACA that was effectuated under the Obama administration is being rescinded.
We will explain. The United States makes known its stance on North Korea's leader, and also ahead, another major hurricane is taking aim at the United States. It is all on today's International Edition. President Trump's administration moved today to end a program that shielded 800,000 young, undocumented immigrants from deportation, but it gave Congress 6 months to act if it wants to continue to allow them to remain in the United States years after their parents illegally brought them into the country. Trump approved the decision, but sent Attorney General Jeff Sessions before cameras to announce the controversial policy. The Sessions ended President Barack Obama's five-year-old executive order that created the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program and with a terse statement that DACA is being rescinded. You just heard that. The program allowed young people who typically entered the country when they were 6 years old, mostly from Mexico and Central American nations, to work and study in the U.S. and serve in its military. Sessions said, "We cannot admit everyone who wants to come here. All cannot be accepted.
We are people of compassion and we are people of law. But there is nothing compassionate about the failure to enforce immigration laws. Enforcing the law saves lives, protects communities and taxpayers, and prevents human suffering. Failure to enforce the laws in the past has put our nation at risk of crime, violence, and terrorism. The compassionate thing to do is end the lawlessness, enforce our laws. And if Congress chooses to make changes to those laws, to do so through the process set forth by our founders in a way that advances the interests of the American people."
Joining us in our Washington studio is Molly McKittrick. She is the editor of VOA's Immigration Unit. And Molly, President Trump decided he wouldn't make the announcement of the DACA decision, as we just said, letting his attorney general do it. Why did he do that? Why do you think?
Well, I suspect because it's not very politically popular. I think there are a lot of Americans who feel that this program should be allowed to go on. What I've read in various publications is that this is the decision, in a sense, is aimed at his base, which is maybe a third of the electorate. So you've got all these other folks who are pro-DACA.
Now that the future of the plan has been put into the hands of Congress, where does that stand? What are the prognostications as to what Congress may or may not do?
I would say that it's anybody's guess, although Congress in the past has not been able to bring itself to act on DACA. It's been fairly controversial. But there are a lot of Republicans and numerous Democrats who have expressed support for the program, so that may change.
It's almost as if Donald Trump, the president, has said, it's a little too controversial. Maybe I should hand it off to somebody else. I mean, that can be maybe assumed, eh?
Well, yes and no. I mean, he was between a rock and a hard place. He had 10 state attorneys general who were threatening to sue him, to sue him and DACA unless he undid it. So he really almost had no choice but to undo the program because the case was likely to lose in court. It was not likely to do well. So it was a case of letting the judiciary do it or take control of it and phase it out himself. In fact, that's what Department of Homeland Security said this morning.
Diana Pliego is the current policy associate at the National Immigration Law Center. She immigrated from Mexico to the United States when she was 3 years old. She grew up as an undocumented immigrant in a mixed-status family. She is now a DACA recipient. During her undergrad year, she helped found and organize a grassroots organization for young immigrants across the state of South Carolina called Young Immigrants for Action. And she since has spent a year working on federal policy at a national faith-based social justice lobby in D.C. And she joins us now. Diana, thanks for being with us. What's your reaction so far to what the Attorney General had to say today?
Well, obviously, I think enraged with what the decision that was made. I think this is an incredibly defining moment for our country that we're finding ourselves in, where, you know, DACA represented the promise of a country that promised to solve problems while still providing and protecting and giving opportunities for young people. We know this is a program that is widely popular and supported by the American people on both sides of the aisle. So this was definitely something that I don't think needed to have happened, and obviously enraged with the decision right now.
What do you think can be done now? You especially as a DACA recipient, and the other, 7,999,999, whatever, people who remain. I know you don't like what happened, but what can be done now? Do you wait on Congress? Do you try to do something else? What might that be?
Well, this is definitely time for all of us to come together. It's going to take every single person who supports this program to call their legislators, remember every single member of Congress, and let them know that you support these dreamers, that you think that they're contributing to your community, and that you want them to be protected. So people have until their work permits expire, and so we have the time, the clock is ticking, and we need people to act in Congress. And that is the hope right now, because that is where the hands have turned.
Diana, I hope this isn't too personal, but I'm wondering when your work permit expires and what you expect to do thereafter.
Yeah, no, I mean, I have approximately a year, so my personal time clock has started today, and I know I'm going to be okay because I know that our community is resilient, and this piece of paper does not define us. Of course, it has provided so many opportunities, and that is why we're going to continue to fight. Like I said, we're going to continue to push Congress to pass a Clean Dream Act, something that does not use us as a bargaining chip to pass things that will hurt the rest of our community. And that's what we're going to do. We're going to fight for our community, and we're just not going to give up. This isn't the end. This is really just the beginning.
Andrew Palczewski joins us. He is International Edition's social media editor. Do you have a question for Deanna?
Yeah, Diana, I was curious as to your thoughts on the power of social media. Already we're seeing early reaction where people are organizing protests. We're seeing a number of members of Congress coming out on social media in favor of passing some kind of Dream Act or DACA bill. Talk about how you think social media can be a tool as this debate continues.
Well, I mean, I think social media is such a great tool because you can reach people that you maybe don't get to have a conversation with. The important thing, though, is that it goes beyond social media. It's great when we can express our support on there, but a hashtag doesn't, at the end of the day, ensure that I can go to work the next day and a year from now. We need action. So that social media awareness needs to translate into action, whether it be showing up at these rallies, calling a member of Congress, or making scheduling a meeting with your member of Congress and seeing them face to face and telling them this is what we want you to do in support of this community.
Andrew, what are people saying on social media about this so far?
Well, you have a lot of people who are against this decision, as Diana just expressed, people who are organizing protests, who are using the hashtags like hashtag DACA, hashtag Dreamers. They're also providing advice as far as what Dreamers need to know now, how long their permits will be active, what they can do going forward. You do have people out there who are in favor of this decision, saying that President Trump is just protecting Americans and, as he promised, making America great again. And a lot of people echoing Attorney General Jeff Sessions' statement that this does not mean that the Dreamers are bad people or that the United States disrespects them. It means that he's enforcing the laws as Congress has passed them. And that's where it gets interesting, too, because as I mentioned, we have a lot of members of Congress going to social media to talk about their positions. They're going to be the ones to vote on this in the coming months. And you're seeing a lot of Democrats, but also a good number of Republicans coming out saying that they'd like to keep these Dreamers here. The one line I've seen from three or four members of Congress is that these Dreamers should not be held responsible for the decisions that their parents made.
Diana, how do you answer those who say that President Trump has made the right decision?
I think that the president is responsible for the good of an entire nation. And even people like Speaker Ryan came out recently and said that, you know, he's been a long opposer of DACA, but he said that the president shouldn't end it because he understands that people's lives are at play here, and people's lives are not something that we should be playing with. And so I think if the president thought it was unconstitutional, then there were other ways to do it. Let Congress act first and then remove the program, but he didn't choose to do that. He chose to put people's lives at risk before there was a solution, before there was a permanent legislative solution.
Molly?
Do you have much faith in Congress? Do you have hope there?
You know, we have seen them act swiftly in response to other things, and so I think they can do it if they want to. So it is in their hands, and I think that's why it's important to keep the pressure up and let them know that the people, the American people, support Dreamers, and that is what we want to see them do, and we want to see them do it now.
Diana Pliego, we thank you so much for being with us. We also thank Molly McKitterick and Andrew Palshevsky, and we shall see what happens from here. Thank you so much for being with us here on International Edition. Among the top stories in the world, President Trump puts the fate of so-called Dreamers in the hands of the U.S. Congress. The United States makes known its stance on North Korea's leader. Syrian forces break the Islamic State siege of Deir al-Zor. One report is claiming increased attacks by Boko Haram leave hundreds dead in West Africa. Hurricane Irma heads toward the Caribbean as a Category 5 storm. Expanded coverage of these stories and more on the VOAnews.com website and all of our social media platforms. This is VOA. We continue with International Edition. U.S. President Trump said Tuesday that he would allow South Korea and Japan to purchase additional military equipment from the U.S. in apparent response to North Korea's Sunday detonation of what was believed to be a hydrogen bomb. One of North Korea's top diplomats warned that Pyongyang is prepared to send what he called more gift packages to the United States. Speaking to the UN-sponsored conference on disarmament in Geneva, Ambassador Tan Tae-song said Pyongyang had successfully carried out a hydrogen bomb test on Sunday and then added, "The U.S. will receive more gift packages from my country as long as it relies on reckless provocations and futile attempts to put pressure on the DPRK." He did not elaborate. Well, U.S. envoy Nikki Haley warned North Korea Monday that the U.S. does not have unlimited patience as she called on U.N. Security Council members to support new, robust sanctions against the rogue regime. From the United Nations, VOA's Margaret Bashir has more on the situation.
North Korea conducted its sixth and largest nuclear test to date on Sunday, quickly drawing international condemnation. At the UN, Nikki Haley had a stern warning for dictator Kim Jong-un.
His abusive use of missiles and his nuclear threats show that he is begging for war. War is never something the United States wants. We don't want it now. But our country's patience is not unlimited. We will defend our allies and our territory.
Haley said the U.S. would circulate a new sanctions resolution to council members and expected to quickly bring it to a vote next Monday.
The time for half measures in the Security Council is over. The time has come to exhaust all of our diplomatic means before it's too late. We must now adopt the strongest possible measures.
The council only just adopted its toughest sanctions yet against North Korea last month. China's UN envoy Liu Zhenyi condemned North Korea's actions and called for dialogue.
The situation on the Korean Peninsula is deteriorating constantly as we speak, falling into a vicious circle. The peninsula issue must be resolved peacefully. China will never allow chaos and war on the peninsula.
Diplomats are running out of sectors to target for sanctions. The international community says North Korea diverts income from several industries to maintain its illicit nuclear and ballistic missile programs. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
Hurricane Irma has strengthened to a Category 5 storm, the most severe designation for a hurricane. People in the Leeward Islands of the Caribbean are preparing for Irma's arrival late Tuesday or early Wednesday as areas to the northwest, from Puerto Rico to Cuba to the coastal United States, wait to see the track the storm will take as the week progresses. Hurricane Irma's Category 5 designation means sustained winds of more than 280 kilometers per hour and will severely damage homes, uproot trees and power poles, and knock out power in affected areas for weeks. Much of Houston is cleaning up from the devastation caused by Hurricane Harvey and the flooding that followed. The rebuilding is just beginning, and the financial impact is being felt by both flood victims and those who did not get water in their homes. Elizabeth Lee explains from Houston.
Valerie Pham just bought this house and had lived in it for only 2 months before Hurricane Harvey hit Houston.
My closest to you in some boxes and it's all like wet and damaged and everything. We just spent like $100 to wash them all yesterday.
Pham does not have flood insurance and is desperate to get financial help. She lost everything in the flood.
You see me on the wall right here.
While flood victims are the ones who are hardest hit by Hurricane Harvey, Houstonians who did not get water in their homes, who are small business owners, are also feeling the effects in the aftermath of the storm.
It's been pretty much a ghost town.
Doug Noe's seafood restaurant is open for business, but it's been slow.
Eating out is leisure, so I don't think leisure is the word for right now.
Separated by a wall, the business next door is a convenience store and gas station managed by Sam Ali. For now, though, there is no gas.
Gas is a big part of the convenience stores. Without gas, we don't run the store inside and the people come for the, like, buy grocery or stuff like that.
There's also a shortage of basic groceries such as milk and water here.
Everything, transportation is be like stuck. Right now, no deliver anything else on our store. At least like 1 week, everybody's stuck. They don't have the, some warehouses of like flooding.
One of Ali's regular customers, Neftali Esperanza, is also feeling the financial effects of the storm.
I didn't have work for 5 days. With no work, I'm not making any money.
Esperanza, who has two young daughters at home, says he is finally starting to get a little bit of work. It will be a while before these small business owners know the extent of the financial impact of the hurricane.
You can't really know. Hopefully it's not too bad.
As Pham cleans up her home and looks for financial assistance, she tries to be optimistic.
Sad, of course, but no matter what, I still have to try harder and rebuild everything and move on.
And hope that no more hurricanes come to Houston this year. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Houston.
This is International Edition, and this is VOA.
Hi, my name's Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings, your request and dedication program here at the Voice of America. 1500 Universal, Monday through Friday, we're there for an hour playing your favorite music. You can send an email in and request your favorite songs by your favorite artists. You can also phone in as well. We have great contests and surprise guests from time to time. Border Crossings, every single day during the week at 1500 Universal, here on the Voice of America.
Need a little straight talk? Want to make sense of the world around you? Ask a question. Hear what others have to say? If so, Voice of America has a variety of talk shows for you. Lifestyle, health, politics, youth, sports. We have it all. Tune into our discussion shows on the radio, TV, or the internet. They examine a wide variety of issues and world events not always covered by other media. VOA.
This is VOA's International Edition. Medieval costumes, a bright pink Cinderella's dress, and a few dozen military-like helmets. One of the oldest theaters in Washington, D.C., Arena Stage, emptied the contents of its closets and put decades worth of costumes up for sale. VOA's Alicia Bacaletz and Kashuyog Zhao discovered which in-demand costumes sold for only a few dollars in this report narrated by Joy Wagner.
The line was long and wrapped around the entire perimeter of Arena Stage. The early bird gets the worm, and in this case, the best costume. Lola found what she needed in just a few minutes.
This is a great costume sale where you can pick up things like this. These are angel wings. They must have taken, I don't know, maybe hundreds of hours to make, and I picked them up for $30.
She also spotted a turquoise boa, a governess's apron, and quite an ordinary jacket, which she's going to wear with jeans. scenes. While Lola was looking for appropriate garb for her art studio, most buyers were hunting for the best Halloween costumes.
People love Halloween, so this is an opportunity to be able to come in and get your Halloween costumes.
Teenager Claire won't have anything to do with traditional Halloween costumes. Instead, she gravitated towards a fake axe, a bloody robe, and a leather apron. She is convinced she will have the most unique costume this Halloween.
This is an apron, and I think this is to go under it.
Some bloody...
I think it's to be like a butcher or an evil butcher, something like that. Princesses are overrated.
The prices varied from $2 to $200. Some of the costumes had designer labels.
For example, a nice pair of pants that are Gucci, they are not priced, so I think these are $4. Under the price tag,
Real Dolce & Gabbana.
Real Dolce & Gabbana.
This sale only takes place every decade. Arena Stage's artistic director said the sale allows the theater to make room for new costumes, thus letting the public benefit from the old costumes that aren't used anymore.
Arena Stage has been a theater for 68 years. We have 68 years worth of costumes. So you can imagine how much that is. There are 25 different racks in the other room. There are huge boxes of wigs. There's probably 100 hats. There are several hundred shoes. I mean, it's pretty remarkable.
And you will always know the origin of the costume. There's always a tag on what you buy with the name of the play in which the costume was worn. The sales were astonishing. Lots of people showed up, and Arena Stage is still calculating its profit from the sale. Lesia Bacaletz, Kai Shu Zhao, VOA News, Washington.
And then there's the story from Maine. A group of Mainers say Passy Pete the Lobster has predicted six more weeks of summer at an annual ceremony there. The crustacean has been fished out of the Passagasawakiag River, for the past 3 years in a tradition modeled after famed groundhog Puxatawny Phil's winter prediction in Pennsylvania. David Krabiel and his business partner, David Bassbridge, thought up the eccentric ceremony as a way to have some fun. Each year, they flank the lobster as he picks a scroll to determine whether Maine will see extended summer. That'll do it for us. Thanks to our director, Patrice Martin, our engineer, John Dryden. I'm Ira Melman. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Yemen is in the midst of a humanitarian crisis of rare proportions. According to the United Nations, around 17 million people go hungry more often than not, and 21 million are in need of humanitarian aid. Around 2 million Yemeni children are acutely malnourished. To make matters worse, Yemen is experiencing an outbreak of cholera, possibly the worst in history. Some 500,000 people have contracted the disease since late April. About 2,000 have already died of it, most of them children under 15 and people over the age of 60. The disease, which is caused by water contaminated with the Vibrio bacterium, is characterized by diarrhea, stomach pains, and severe dehydration. Sadly, this humanitarian catastrophe is man-made. Nearly 3 years ago, war broke out when Houthi militia seized the capital of Sana'a. Within 6 months, and at the request of the government of Yemen, a coalition led by the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia began airstrikes on rebel positions to halt their southward expansion. The ongoing conflict has so far killed about 10,000 civilians, displaced millions, damaged public infrastructure, and interrupted the delivery of imports in a country that relies on them to feed its people. Today, much of Yemen's infrastructure, including roads, hospitals, water storage, and delivery and sanitation systems, has been destroyed. Deteriorating sanitation and lack of access to clean water are largely to blame for the cholera epidemic that is presently killing about one person per hour in Yemen. Nearly all of the ill who receive medical treatment survive the disease, but unfortunately, nearly 15 million of Yemen's population of 27.5 million have no access to basic medical care. Since the beginning of the fiscal year 2017, the United States has contributed well over $467 million to help alleviate the humanitarian disaster in Yemen. Although much of this aid is going toward food and nutrition, a substantial amount has been diverted toward fighting cholera. Alleviating the humanitarian crisis in Yemen is a top priority for the U.S. Agency for International Development, said State Department spokesperson Heather Nauert. We call on our partners around the globe and the community of nations to join us with generous donations of food, medicines,